I was a science teacher for like a decade. Currently, this is all I do now.
Okay. Really quick, with as far as evolution goes, so I'm kind of looking into this, and do you have like studies you'd recommend that show evolutionary processes creating novel features? From what I understand, there's like Richard Lenski's study where he goes to like I think he studies like evolving E. coli bacteria, but it's contested whether any novel features actually come about by that, as opposed to some of those features already being there and just repurposed. And then there's another study about nematode worms, and I think there were like 2 billion generations, same deal. No real example of novel features. Do you have something that actually shows that?
There are multiple examples of that. I tackled that in my new book, More Rational Answers to More Stupid Questions. Because what happens is, like, I can give somebody an example of something new, and then they tend to shift the goalpost and say, well, that's just a modification of a pre-existing structure or something like that. It's not quote unquote new. But no, there are a bunch of these. So what you want to look for are what are called de novo mutations. So these are traits that, so in order for an organism to express a trait, it has to be like it has to come about through like a gene, right? So, but genes only make up a really tiny fraction of your DNA, 1 or 2%, in animals, at least in bacteria, most of their genome is genes. So, what we need to look for is a part of your DNA that was there but wasn't a gene being converted into a gene. That will be a brand new feature that's never been seen before. And we know of a bunch of those. There are some fruit flies, and the species is D. melanogaster. And some of these genes have really exciting names, like CG32690. Huh? Yeah. Geneticists are I'm sure there's a method to the naming system, but it's so unattractive. But we have found in that species of fruit fly, I believe it's four. Let me just double check my manuscript here. Oh, I just wrote multiple. Okay. I was thinking there were four specifically. Maybe there's more. But
For species or for different de novo creations, like
de novo
features.
genes in that species.
What
So
did the genes create? Like which features, so I know what to look for.
for the fruit fly one, I can just tell you the name of the study. The fruit fly one is really interesting. We can't figure out what those genes do, but we know that we know that they are genes because they produce like protein products. But we also know that they're essential because if you take those fruit flies and you use CRISPR and take those de novo genes out, then they die. Their bodies don't develop properly. So
Right.
they're absolutely essential, but it doesn't like create something. This is another, even people that like love science and don't even disagree with evolution or whatever, a lot of people don't understand just how abstract and complex genetics is. Most traits that organisms have are the result of many genes working together, and many genes have no actual visible manifestation really in the organism, but they're obviously essential for life. There are a few
Right.
others that are way better. There's a type of Arctic, well, there's I always forget which one's which. Again, I could look it up here. So there are fish in the Arctic.
Is that sort of a similar study?
It's not really similar to the fruit. Well, I mean, this one was just found in nature for the fruit flies. I'm not sure if like it happened in the lab and
Right.
serendipitously we found them or whatever. I don't remember off the top of my head, but so there are Arctic cod and they create antifreeze proteins. And they get their antifreeze protein from a de novo mutation, so a part of their DNA that wasn't making genes at all, and then it starts making antifreeze, and they weren't making any antifreeze proteins before that. There's a in the Antarctic, there are these fish that actually took a gene that produces a pancreatic digestive enzyme, and that got mutated to the point where now it produces an antifreeze protein. So that one's really wild. It's not technically de novo, but I think it still satisfies what you're looking for here, because yeah, it took like pre-existing structure in terms of a gene or whatever, but it made it create something completely different with a entirely different function. So there are more of those that we know of, but those are some examples.
Okay. And so these would be different than like the E. coli and the worms. Like these are true de novo, because in theory, like I think for evolution to work, you'd have to have some feature that it's never had before, because usually like the story goes is kind of like brains evolved from some sort of minimal, primitive sort of like light receptor, something that was like sensitive to the environment. Like that had to appear on the radar somewhere, and that's completely new. So in theory I can see like how there has to be something new here, as opposed to a repurposing. You know, there has to be something like that never had before in order for it to develop into the complexity we see today. So that's what I'm looking for. But all right, I think I have some of these down. I'll look into these. Unless you had, I had the Arctic cod and the fruit flies. Do you have anything else? Or
let me just bring, I'll just show you. I can put it on the screen. These are some papers. Let's see here. Right there. That's as big as I can make it. So I don't know if you can see that fully or not. But this is the one about the fish. And then this is the one about the fruit flies.
Okay. All right. Excellent. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
I want to tell you one other thing, though.
Sure.
So what you're saying about like, well, it has to come from, you know, it has to be something brand new. Most of the time, evolution is Darwin, he never really called it evolution. He said descent with modification. So really, most of the time, evolution is just about pre-existing structures morphing and changing so gradually that they never all of a sudden become a brand new thing. But after millions of changes that are all now cumulative, because they've happened over subsequent generations, then all of a sudden you do end up with a totally different feature, function, structure, or whatever, compared to what you had, you know, whatever it is, thousands, millions of generations before. Want to learn how to make people do this?
If that's true, then what? Hold on. This is really complicated.
It's not. This book will be your guide. I debunk all of the common anti-scientific arguments, plus some uncommon ones. Every single copy is personally signed and shipped by me. There's even an audiobook. Link in the description.
Got it.
Sorry, one other thing, because I forgot about this. anti-evolution people and creationists, they often point to these bacterial studies and, you know, studies with fruit flies in the lab, and they'll say something like, oh, there have been 80,000 generations, and yet it's still blank, which actually, it's kind of a good argument if you don't understand evolution or science really at all. I would say, well, more just if you don't understand evolution at all. If the environment doesn't change, then there's absolutely no reason or selective pressure for the organism to change. And organisms that live in labs, yeah, scientists, they set up certain independent variables to manipulate the environment, but they're extremely minor. It's like, let's change the temperature slightly. Let's change the pH slightly. Let's add this one chemical to the environment. Otherwise, these creatures live in incredibly stable environments. So when we talk about evolution, we often talk about selective pressure, and those are just the cumulative things, pressures, factors in the environment that drive species either usually toward extinction or toward evolution. So in nature, it's actually so much more powerful because nature's not like a lab. In nature, when climate change happens or when a new predator is introduced into the environment or something, everything changes, not just one particular variable and then everything else stays the same. So nature is actually incredibly powerful at driving these kinds of changes. So the lab, it's kind of funny because we use laboratory experiments as kind of the gold standard in proving something scientifically. But it's actually, the funny thing about the lab experiment is it's extremely narrow in its scope. It's as narrow as it can get, which is the point, because you want to eliminate all the extemporaneous variables and say, yes, I know for sure that this thing is causing this degree of change, but that actually dramatically limits the amount of change you would expect. So I hope that made sense, because it's kind of,
yeah,
it's hard to get that out, but it's a really crucial point.
Right. I totally get what you're saying. Like, if I could repeat back, like sort of the lab scenario is very controlled. It's not, it doesn't sound representative of actual, like what happens in nature. So you're not going to see as much change. That was sort of your point. And then, you also said, I think you were talking about, another similar point as far as like, they may be in a very stable environment where change just doesn't happen because there's no selection pressure. There's nothing in the environment forcing change. I could kind of see them responding though to say, well, like I know the nematode study, like those are actual worms, like prehistoric worms, and they look identical to pretty much what we have today. And they would say, well, that just sounds convenient. Like this, it seems unfalsifiable. We don't have any examples. And when we do have an example of something that has not changed in billions of years, oh, you could just say, well, there wasn't enough selection pressure. Then it almost makes it just unfalsifiable, because you could say that about any scenario. That's what I preempt them saying. So
I mean, you could make that argument, but if you look at the totality of the evidence, says the exact opposite, because we have, we have incredible numbers of fossils. I wish we had way more, but we have so many fossils that we can say definitively, no, there were no woolly mammoths when the dinosaurs were around. If there were, we would have found some. There were no dinosaurs around when trilobites were roaming the earth. Like, we know this. So we have epochs of history on Earth where we can take a snapshot of, you know, we're only ever going to have a small sample of the life forms that existed. But we have so many of those that we can confidently say, yeah, over these periods of time, there are certain organisms that never coexisted. And it ends up being the vast majority of all organisms have never coexisted. So the only thing that makes any sense is that life has changed throughout those epochs.
Right. Yeah, I think you could definitely show things have changed. But I think what's in question here is the mechanisms. So they would say, yeah, there's evidence of change for sure. But we just doubt that the mechanisms are Darwinian. And so it's kind of like two different categories. And these studies, what they kind of highlight is these studies do not show these mechanisms doing as they are claimed to do. And so that's kind of the thing. But let me let you go. I'll look into this stuff. But I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Get a free book, 2 free audiobooks, and ad-free videos by becoming a Patreon member.